This week on The Breezy Breakfast, we hear from Erin Caton about the language of gender. Erin has firsthand knowledge of this. She is non-binary. With her lighthearted, clear, and positive manner, Erin explains how the understanding of gender is often confused with sex, sexuality, and gives examples of different cultures that have different views of gender. We talk about the etiquette of referring to people by the preferred pronouns, we touch on English grammar, bigotry, acceptance, and embracing the broad culture of humanity. Now over to our moderator, Morgan.
Good morning, Breezy Breakfast. It is Thursday, July the 13th, and today we are celebrating tomorrow, which is International Non-Binary Persons Day. We have with us for the very first time as a guest, our counselor from Ward 1, Erin Caton, who is our first openly non-binary counselor in the city of Guelph. And just before we start, we do always provide a land acknowledgement, a territorial acknowledgement. And today I wanted to highlight the fact that there are Indigenous women in a landfill site, and the province of Manitoba is refusing to even attempt to search that landfill site for these murdered Indigenous women that are known to be there. Indigenous women are not trash. And I am a firm believer that if it were a couple of white women that were disposed of like trash in a landfill site, that the government would be doing something not dissimilar to the way that all of the Richie Riches went after the mini sub going to the Titanic while there were refugees drowning in the Mediterranean. We here in Guelph are on the traditional territory of the Attawandaran, the Haudenosaunee, and the Anishinaabeg peoples. We are part of Treaty 3, and it is the territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation. We are all treaty people and have a responsibility to the place that we live, work, and play. So, Erin, thank you so much for being with us today. I know you've got an incredible presentation. If you would like to give a little bit of information about you and why this presentation was put together originally, all that kind of good stuff, please go right ahead and then go into your presentation.
Great. So, as you mentioned, I'm a city councilor in Guelph, and I came out officially about 2 years ago after decades of contemplating gender. And it's kind of an interesting thing because, like, as it evolves, you can learn more about it and you even learn more about yourself and your feelings. And I'm sure as we're all people who are not new to the world, you can kind of feel yourself, you know, change and grow as you get older. And so it's nice to kind of learn more about yourself and your brain as you go along. And gender is just one of those things that can kind of fall into that. So I created this presentation initially for my family, because, you know, when we come out, it's nice to have something to show folks. And I am somebody who will just like make a project plan or a list as a way to just sort myself out. So I figured it might be helpful for others to take a look and go on the gender journey with me. So I am going to bring you along. All right. So this is my Gender 101 course. Now, for all intents and purposes, you are now my family. So let me know how you think it's going to go when I give it to them. Gender is an evolving concept. And if there's things you don't know, you're not alone. As gender expectations are a societal construct and gender is basically neurological, when society evolves, we're going to likely expand on these. So the key is to kind of get used to ambiguity and to not get too set in one idea. So what is gender? Gender is how you feel in your body. And it might not match your sex organs or the sex that you were assigned at birth. When you're born, you're assigned a sex, not a gender. Gender is a social concept and it can ebb and flow. And the options we're going to talk about have been around for a long time. They're just kind of more out in the open now. And people have been talking a lot more about gender in the last 10 years. And the way I like to think of these things is kind of like you're at a salad bar and you have a lot of options at the salad bar. And on the list are biological sex, gender, pronouns, physical presentation, and sexuality. And these are all different things and you can mix and match. And when you are building your salad, it's about you and it's not about anybody else. So if somebody has a salad that you don't understand and you're like, why would you possibly pair olives with strawberries? Fair, but you don't have to eat it. So you have to think about things in terms of someone else's situation, your situation, completely different. And now let's talk about biological sex. When we think of sexes, we think of chromosomes, basically. And XY chromosomes are what we consider male. XX chromosomes are what we consider female. But there's also a whole other situation in terms of sex. Intersex people, and you can have like a mix of XXY or some cells with XX and others with XY or just X, and other combinations can also occur. And we've got about 2% of the people worldwide have visible intersex traits. If you're thinking about the population of Canada, that means about the population of Guelph and Cambridge combined would be the population of folks who are intersex in Canada. Now, for gender, there's a lot more options than I actually have here, but these ones are the most common, so I figure it's a good place to start. So cisgender, male and female, just means that your gender is the same as the sex you were identified when you were born. So you agree with your sex organs, seems to represent your gender. Transgender, male and female, means that you feel the opposite of what you were assigned at birth. Autigender is specific to autistic people, and it's the, basically you don't understand the concept of gender, so you're just like, not for me. Agender means you do not feel like any gender. Genderqueer can encompass any one of these. Two-spirit is for Indigenous and First Nations only, and we're going to go a little bit more into that a little later in the presentation. And then non-binary, like myself, where you can feel like no gender, you can feel like a mix in between, there's a little percentage split, or you can feel like everything or nothing. And pangender means you can kind of feel similar to one or the other. And gender fluid, omnigender, means that you can kind of flip back and forth throughout the day even. Pronouns. This is one that people get stuck on a lot because they're more concerned about grammar than identity. You don't necessarily have to be non-binary to use they, them pronouns. And in French, folks are starting to use IEL, which is a combination. But a lot of folks do. Like I personally use she and they, and I'm fine with either one. Some people use he, him, and il, she, her, and elle. And then there are some combinations of z and zer and the same thing pronounced, but with an X. There's also other new ones coming out. So these are not all of them. These are just the most common. Physical presentation. Now, a lot of folks, for some reason, think that clothes are your gender or your sexuality, but in fact, they are just clothes. You can have makeup or hair dye, regardless of your gender or your sexuality. There is no such thing as a gendered color. Throughout history, we've kind of switched, like, kind of go back and forth on what blue and pink means, but ultimately, they're just colors, and people are putting too much thought into what other people are inside based on what they're doing on their outside. And similarly, anyone can wear a skirt, dress, or pants. And the really important thing is that all of them should have functional pockets, because this is what we should really be concerned about in life. Now, for sexuality, people get really kind of hung up on this part of the salad bar. but gender isn't really related to sexuality. You can have gender preferences, no preferences, genital preferences, or a mix. These are just the most common. Heterosexual is when you have opposite genders and that's what you're attracted to. Gay is male, male, lesbian, female, female. Bisexual is male, female, equal opportunity. Pansexual is more about the personality than the gender or the bits. Asexual people are not interested in sexuality generally at all. Demisexual people are interested in having a strong connection before they have any kind of sexuality. Androsexual means you're attracted to masculinity. Gynosexual means you're attracted to femininity. And scoliosexual people are attracted to transgender and non-binary people exclusively. Now that you know that you've got all of the different salad options, the biggest role now is to be a gender ally. Make sure that everybody can have their salads in whatever way that they want, in whatever combinations they want. And some of the ways that you can do that is adding pronouns to your bio or email, or getting a pronoun pin. And this makes it easier for other people who are not out yet, or who have pronouns that don't seem to match their physical presentation. It makes them feel more comfortable to be able to ask for those accommodations. And you can ask your organization to include a wider range of pronouns and genders on forms. I know that the Upper Grand School Board recently did this, and as a non-binary parent, it was actually really nice to be able to go through and click things that were appropriate for me. And do not ask people what their gender is, because often it seems like you're trying to find out what's going on in their pants, which is really none of your business. So you can offer your pronouns and use they, them, and if you're not sure, and if someone corrects you, just say, oh, I'm sorry, I'll use that in the future. And usually everyone's very cool with that. Now, especially since we had the Rainbow Crosswalk come out, and I was a very big supporter of that online, I've noticed that some people are not big into respecting differences. And it's just like, so long as you are not affected by what somebody else is eating, it shouldn't matter to you. And it's the same thing with people's pronouns, gender, sexuality. You just have to let people eat in peace, make sure you save some space at the salad bar for everybody, and then we'll all be good. Now, as I said before, there is a large history of gender, and this is globally, it's not just locally. So in Africa, and I apologize in advance, I'm going to pronounce all of these names very, very incorrectly. So do not use my pronunciation, it will be all wrong. The Ankole people in what is now Uganda, they chose a woman to dress as a man and be an oracle to the god Mukasa. And the Sakalavis of Madagascar raised little boys thought to have feminine appearances as girls. The Antandroi and Hova called their gender crossers Sekrata. In Asia, Indonesia recognizes a third gender, Waria. One ethnic group, the Bugis, numbering around 3 million people, recognize five genders. In Pakistan and Bangladesh, the Hiras are officially recognized as a third gender by the government, being neither completely male or female. In India, also, transgender people have been given the status of third gender and they're protected by law. The term the community members use is Khwarja Sira. The Kathui or Katui refers to either a transgender woman or an effeminate gay male in Thailand. A significant number of the Thais perceive the Katuis as belonging to a third gender, including many of them themselves, while others see them as a kind of a man or a kind of a woman. And when considering transgender women as a group in Thai society, most refer to themselves as a woman, with a minority referring to themselves as a second kind of woman, and only a few of them referring to themselves as Cthulhu. In the Pacific Islands, the Kanaka Maoli Indigenous Society, the Mahu referred to biological males or females who inhabited a gender role somewhere between or encompassing both the masculine and feminine. They held a sacred social role in ancient traditions and rituals. The Fa'afin are people who identify themselves as a third gender in Samoa and American Samoa. Recognized gender identity, gender role, since at least the early 20th century in Samoan society, and some theorize an integral part of the traditional Samoan culture. The Fa'afin are male at birth and embody both masculine and feminine gender traits. In Latin America, the Incas worshipped the Chuchui Tinte, a dual-gendered god. Third-gender ritual attendants, or shamans, performed sacred rituals to honor this god. The Kwariwami shamans wore androgynous clothing as a visible sign of a third space that negotiated between the masculine and the feminine, the past and the present, living and the dead. Today, in the indigenous Zapotec culture of Waxa, is not divided by the usual dichotomies, gay, straight, male, female. There's a commonly accepted third category of mixed gender of people called muxes. And now we're back to North America. Anthropological research indicates well over 100 instances of diverse gender expression in Native American tribes at the time of our early contact. The most common modern term for gender nonconforming members is two-spirit, and it's used by some indigenous North Americans to describe certain spiritual people, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and gender variant individuals in their communities. The term was adopted in 1990 at an indigenous lesbian and gay international gathering to encourage the replacement of the anthropological term Burdach. The individual tribes also have their own terms, such as the Winke amongst the Lakota, and Muxuga amongst the Ponca, and Bade amongst the Crow. These are all third gender roles adopted by males, similar to transgender women today. The Diné in the Navajo society has traditionally had five genders, and Aztlán, female and woman, Hastin, male and man, Nadle, hermaphrodite, androgyny or gender fluidity, Nadlehi, women and man, feminine gender, and Dilba, man and woman, masculine gender. For the Navajo, gender had less to do with sexual preference or biology than societal role. Most of the time, there is not much special about the people. It's about social hierarchy, and that female gendered individuals were more powerful because feminine is the first gender, and that they could be revered because they might express both male and female spirits perfectly, whereas every other gender could only express one spirit. So now you have been through gender 101, and one of the things that I realized when I was diagnosed as autistic is that no one thinks the same, and we all kind of think we do until we learn that all of our brains are a little bit different. And gender is a really good way to kind of get into how other people think about themselves and realize that there's a much wider range of experience happening in life than you could possibly imagine.
Thank you so much, Erin, for that very wholesome and fulsome description from your point of view. I've watched a few videos recently in preparation for this topic. So one of the things that I was hoping that you could address a little bit more, especially given the demographic for the individuals in this group. We all went to school. We all had grammar hammered into our heads. What do we do when we make a mistake, when we accidentally misgender someone, predominantly because of how we were taught grammar as children?
You just apologize, correct yourself, and move on with your day, because even folks who are non-binary sometimes love a pronoun. No one is a perfect person. No one's going to get it right all the time. And it's new, right? So it takes a while to get it into your head. And all that is just practice, right? Repetition, practice, and apologizing. Because no one's going to be upset at you if you made an honest mistake.
And I'm just wondering if there's anybody in the restaurant that has a question. I'm just seeing that Kevin has put something in the chat.
Tanya, there is a question from Bella in the restaurant.
Go for it.
Good morning. Erin, I was wondering, you mentioned it's not okay to ask for someone's gender. Is it okay to ask for their pronouns, though?
100%. Asking for someone's pronouns is the politest way you can go about it, right? And it's even better if you just offer yours up first. Just like, hi, you know, my name is Erin. My pronouns are she, they. Do you mind if I ask your pronouns so that we're all on the same page? And then everybody will be very forthcoming if they actually know what pronouns are. Sometimes people don't, and then you just have to explain.
Okay, I have a question here from Kevin. I have encountered some folks online who believe we need to reclaim our divine feminine, and I am not sure what that means. Does anyone else know what that means?
I can give a guess as to what that means. I think that people are, when they talk about their divine feminine, divine masculine, they're just trying to go back to more comfortable traditional gender roles. And so it's more about a set of rules and behaviors that they think you should be following if you are, you know, if you identify as female or if you identify as male, then you should fit into a specific box. And how that equates to divinity, I'm not sure. But as we, you know, move through space and time, you realize more and more that those rules are about what makes you happy, right? So if you are a woman and you want to do traditionally masculine things, then go to town, right? No one should be able to stop you from doing anything. Your gender and your behavior are not the same, right? There is no rule for what makes a woman and what makes a man. It's just about you and your feelings and how you're choosing to go off in life.
Thank you, Erin. I'm told that Susan has an answer. Susan?
The divine feminine isn't anything to do with what we're talking about. It certainly isn't traditional role of women. It's from, I would say, the mid-80s, mid-90s, and it's to do with a spiritual aspect. You can be anything and still have a divine feminine. It's respecting the sort of God-like aspects of the spirit, yeah, and the heart. It's not anything to do with today's thing about being, you know, like a traditional mother in Florida. It's not anything to do with that. It's more of a spiritual feeling and study. I have a friend who did a PhD in that, and we went through all this, her studies with her. There's this college in the United States called the Universal, it's in California, she studied there.
Susan, would this also apply to the divine masculine? Because I forgot to say that part of Kevin's question. I'm assuming all of this would also apply to the divine masculine, correct?
Yeah, it was more movement. It wasn't so much that. It's not to do with masculinity.
I think there's like a new version of it that's happening right now, depending on how on TikTok you are, because I think folks are using the original and kind of expounding on it to make it more into a social movement, because there's a group called Trad Wives and Trad, I don't know what the husband version of that is, but basically folks who are trying to bring back traditional gender roles in society and stuff like that. And they've been using those terms. So it's good to hear what the original was about.
I've got some questions here. Yeah, if, for example, if gender is about personal choice, what if it's confusing for children? That would be one question. And it's related to the New Brunswick law about parental rights.
Okay, so gender, just like sexuality, isn't so much a choice, is just your brain and your understanding of it, right? It's like how you feel and how you are. Now, kids, just like everybody else, can feel a certain way about their gender, and their brains are kind of, as they develop, they're learning new things about themselves too, right? So some kids kind of realize that their gender is not what they were assigned at birth with their sex. It doesn't match up as young as like six, right? And that depends on them. And the issue with the school is that not all families are safe to come out to. And when I was preparing for the party for the Rainbow Crosswalk, I did some looking up into stats. And even with the public health unit here, we did a survey amongst kids and to see, you know, the mental health and how kids are doing within certain age groups based on their genders. And the kids who were non-binary had the hardest time coming out at home because there was a larger group of families who were not accepting. So what the New Brunswick school has done is they're not actually protecting the human rights of the students, because gender is a protected group under human rights and parenting is not. So there is no parental human rights. What there is the right for the child to be safe, regardless of how people feel in their home. And the school is actually putting kids in harm's way by making that legislation. Because if the kid felt safe enough to come out at home, they would, right? And mental health and suicide are most often thought about when a kid doesn't feel comfortable in their own body, right? And all you do at this age is respect someone's name choice and pronouns. There's nothing permanent. There's nothing that's going to be happening to this kid. The school is not invoking any kind of like medical options for them. All they're doing is respecting their wishes and giving them a safe place to feel comfortable if they don't have that at home.
Okay, so now I'm going to switch to another question. Haven't women in North America been wearing typically clothes that men have been wearing? And isn't this what, let's say, people of faith have been doing for quite some time?
Yeah, but again, like clothes and gender are not the same. Like you can wear what you want and feel differently. Like I can rock a suit and tie as much as I can rock a very cute vintage dress. And if my back allowed for it, I would wear heels occasionally. But it has nothing to do with my gender or being non-binary, right?
Okay, I've got a question here in the chat. If I want to have a conversation with you, why do I need to understand all of this any more than I need to know your socioeconomic background, education, or religion? Do we need to have protocols for these aspects of a person's being as well?
Well, you don't have to know anything about me to have a conversation with me, right? And same thing with me, you. But if I'm referring to you politely, it would be nice if I knew your name and your pronouns, right? Because otherwise I'm just saying, hey, you, and using they just because I'm not sure, right? And if they is not what makes you comfortable, then I would much rather use he or she, because I want to be a respectful person and be polite.
I'd like to ask you to break down the concept of demisexual. You said that it had to do with more of a strong connection, having a strong connection with someone before having sexual relations with them.
Yes. Folks who are demisexual, they have to have an emotional bond before any feelings of sexuality can function with them, basically. It's like they don't really have any sexual feelings unless they feel bonded to someone, and then they're good to go.
So wouldn't that apply to a great many people?
Like you could be... No, not everybody. If you've ever seen The Bar Night, a lot of people don't need to have a very strong connection in order for their sexuality to be very active. That's like the hookup culture and one night stands and other things like that. So not everybody is demisexual.
So in that case, then it is about sex then, like the sexual relations.
For demisexual people, that's a part of the sexuality. Yeah.
So their sexuality is part of their gender.
No. That was on a different slide. So there's sexuality, which is not part of gender. So within the salad bar, we had, you know, your biological sex, we had your gender, we have your gender presentation and your sexuality. So these are all different things that are not necessarily related to each other. But they kind of make up what we think of when we see like the rainbow community.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification about gender and sex. I misunderstood. Morgan, I see that you have a comment, and then I'd like to go on to another question.
Thanks. I just wanted to expand a little bit on what Erin was saying. So you can be cisgender and demisexual. You can be gay and demisexual. You can be non-binary and demisexual. They're not dependent upon one another. And I think that's where a lot of people start to get a little bit confused. Granted, I did myself. So awesome that we've got that part figured out. Thank you so much.
It's kind of a comment, but I've been thinking a lot in the last few years about how we become men and women. And the comment from that person, that JP person, who I'm not going to name, where he says, if I don't know your gender, how do I know to treat you, basically? I think a lot about that how people are treated based on how people see them instead of who they are. And especially that person that, like, how you become a person is how people decide you are before you even know who you are. And yeah. It's discrimination, and it's very limiting, I think. And I'll just leave it at that, but comment on that maybe.
I know exactly who you're talking about. He is the internet Voldemort when you have a different non-standard gender. It's interesting because what he's basically getting down to is, how do I know if I get to be sexist right now? Right? And that's what it's about. He wants to know whether or not he gets to be misogynistic towards you, put a bunch of expectations on you, because he wants to have this world where men are a certain way, women are treated a certain way, and then he gets to be on top because that is his part of the spectrum as far as he is thinking about traditional gender roles.
Let's go to Susan, who now has the microphone.
It seems that in the last, 6 months to a year, the touch point that's caused a lot of flare-ups is the drag readings at school, and that seems to have hardened a lot of positions, especially in Florida, but up North Wellington and different places like that. So, Erin, could you comment on the whole issue of drag coming into the schools and the implications and why parents are so upset about that?
Yeah, they're upset because they've been fed a line and they're falling for it, right? So drag is just theater. And the drag that would be happening in the libraries is not the drag that you would go to at a drag brunch. It is very, very different. The perception of that is very different than the reality. A lot of folks tend to make up conspiracy theories when they want to have their ideology followed. And the alt-right, who is trying to do this kind of war against the LGBTQ plus community, is using drag as their boogeyman. And if you look, there's all of these folks who post child abusers and things like that. Again, this is like a TikTok world thing, but they basically go through who has been charged for crimes against children. And that is never a drag queen. It is never a drag queen. It is always a pastor or a coach or a child youth worker or someone else who is in a position of trust that you really wish was not doing any of that stuff, but it is not the drag queens. So it's a distraction against what's really, really happening and how we need to go through all of these different systems and make it so that kids cannot be abused. And the best way for kids to not be abused is for them to learn real names for their biology and to understand what abuse is. And this is what they don't want them being taught in schools, because it would actually out the folks who are the true abusers, who tend to be in that very, very, like, and this is not all conservatives, but it's like a very specific alt-right style conservative that is pushing that narrative, because they're actually protecting their own in that case.
Bill, I believe you had a follow-up.
Yes, I did. My first follow-up is going to be that in terms of exclusive language, in my exclusive language, there's no such thing as alt-right. There's only alt-left. And there's a reason for that. But anyway, just the following up on Erin, on Erin's comments about drag shows, and what, for all intents and purposes, in an adult context, is a form of burlesque. Erin and I went to a show downtown in Guelph, and it was very, very clear from the artists that were there that they were being very respectful of any minors that might have been in the audience, explaining very, very carefully that this was, for all intents and purposes, an adult show, and that parents with minors needed to be aware that some of the language might get a little bit raw and be a little bit mature, I'll put it that way. In terms of the storytelling, the thing that struck me that I have a real concern about is that I believe it could have been Florida, actually, Susan, where, or maybe it's New Brunswick, but in one of them, there was the right of a parent to have their kid opt out of somebody telling a story if they were, it's in Toronto. I'm sorry that it is in Toronto. That's absurd. If a person is Black or Jewish or female or old, do we have the right to opt out? Because we do not wish to be exposed to an old Jewish Black male. This is a problem for me, but of course, maybe I'm wrong, but that's because I'm alt left. Let me pass the microphone to Bella.
Just a real quick comment, and I hope I don't muddle it up, but I think parents are coming from the right place because of the abuse that Erin had mentioned. And it's an area that they don't understand. And as a parent, I used to be afraid of those questions that I couldn't answer, things that I didn't know. So I'm not trying to excuse them at all, but I'm hoping they would educate themselves further. There's no one sweeter than a drag queen. They're just full and brimming with love because of what they've been through in life. I mean, you know, it's pretty hard just hearing what everyone said, but yeah, I wish people would educate themselves more and then they wouldn't be afraid of anything new, things that are emerging and parents are not able to maybe at that point explain yet. Just a quick comment. Thank you.
No, I totally agree. And I think that a lot of people see proximity and knowledge as contagion, and it's really not, right? No one's going to, you know, switch their gender based on knowing that it's an option, because it's not the most comfortable thing to do. And it takes a lot of effort and you get misgendered all the time. And like, it's not the fun place to be, right? If you can be standard, then you're just going to be that because that's who you are. It's just like, I don't become a Catholic every time I walk past a church, and I'm personally an atheist. And like, I've gone through many, many religious institutions and I'm still an atheist, and it's not going to change just because I've like been in the company of others, and everyone is different, right? And that should be better, because how boring would it be if we were all just the same?
Well said. I want to turn to a different point of view. It might be considered to be very individualistic, especially in what might be described as our culture, which is somewhat collective, to say everyone should refer to me as this pronoun when I'm not around. Now, on the other hand, it might be argued that it is also very individualistic to say that I have the freedom of speech and I have the right to say what I want. In my opinion, freedom of speech and linguistic clarity will generally trump what people want others to say. And another point is that I really can't determine what others call me when I'm not there. Similarly, what if I say that my pronoun is Her Majesty? So I guess what I'm getting at is there's some holes in this, in the underlining logic. And I'd like you to comment on that.
Well, you know, if someone's asking you to call them Your Majesty, they're probably pulling your chain, for one. It's not something that they're really truly requiring of you. And right now we're dealing in, you know, literally magical hypotheticals. So of course, you know, you can't force someone to refer to you as your pronoun when you're not there. It's like someone can call you Karen derogatorily when you're not in the room, if that's how they feel about you, right? But asking for someone to be respectful of you if they are treating you like an individual and a person that they value in their lives, then yeah, I would expect someone to try to use a pronoun if I'm not in the room. I'm not going to be there to correct them. But if I have friends who have come out to me as having different pronouns, then I try my best to use them when they're not there, so that when they are there, I will have practiced enough that I won't make the mistake, right? So just like someone uses their middle name instead of their given first name, you know, if someone prefers Richard, do not call them Dick, right? It's a matter of just being respectful.
So with regard to children and say confusion, children believe in Santa Claus. Children often do not have an idea of what gender or sexuality is. And I think previously you had mentioned that it can go back and forth. Boys can experiment with wearing dresses and girls can, well, girls can, both boys and girls can act in gender non-conforming ways. So where was I going with this? Oh, yes. If gender is a concept or a social concept, why is it not possible for to refer to a female as she and a male as he, regardless of how they act? Because what we're doing, I think what we're doing is we are talking about how someone feels, especially children, when that could change from day to day. We're talking about a subjective feeling, and I will talk about the language here a little bit. We use words, like I said, to communicate clearly. And there is a tension, I think, between the priority to show respect to people and the priority to communicate clearly with the listeners. So I guess I've thrown a whole bunch there at you. So please comment as you will.
So what I think you're trying to get at is the difference between gender and sex again. People, if they say, I am a woman, I want to use she, her, then you do that, regardless of what they look like. Because it's not about speaking clearly, it's about thinking of what's in someone's pants, right? And if that's what you're hung up on, is what's in someone's pants rather than what's in their head, then you're not being clear. You're obfuscating their feelings and their individuality for what you think should be correct, right? So it's not about clarity, it's about comfort. And it's about getting past that and what you are not familiar with and moving on to gender as being the part that's actually important. Because regardless of what you think is in someone's pants, you might be incorrect, right? Like we just talked about how 2% of the population has ambiguity in terms of their sexuality, like their sex at birth, because they are intersex. So there is more than one sex to begin with. And people have had surgeries as babies because they came out with two different sex organs and the doctors just picked one, right? And when that child grows up, they come out and now they have to go through the process of being transgender because they picked the wrong one, right? So we are making these decisions for people without including them. And when someone tells you, nope, we got it wrong because my brain is very different from what my external physicality is showing us, then you just have to believe them, right? Because it's not about what you think is right and what you are comfortable with and about someone's sex. It's about their brain and how they feel and what makes them happy. So if we're going to be people who are respectful to each other and be polite in society, then you just go with it, right? And in terms of children, right, like there is no change. Like if a kid wants to be called he this week and she next week or they the week after, what's the harm in that? Like it's nothing. What is the worst that will happen if you just change the pronoun, right? Very, like, they'll just be happier, pretty much. They'll get to try it on for size and see how it feels. And that might, help them make decisions later on down the road. But all you're doing is just using a word that someone has asked you to.
Okay, so you're talking about respect for the person and rather than what I would call linguistic clearness. Because a pronoun, as I understand it, is a linguistic tool to signify, you know, a named antecedent.
It's to indicate their gender, not to indicate their sex. And so if you, like, that they're telling you what their gender is, there is no visible clues for gender that are set in stone.
Okay. I believe Phil has a comment.
Thanks very much, Tanya. I'm listening to this, and I think that there is something very important about this, and I'm going to turn to the language of race. It is certainly publicly not appropriate to use the N-word or to refer to people who have a Semitic background as being vermin. We would not use the N-word either privately nor publicly. It's both respectful and similarly, I think we have to also engage in the principle of hurtful as well. The issue of using pronouns, whether it is a public usage of them or a private usage of them, and then using them differently is, I think, the ultimate insult to an individual. And I think we need to place it within the context of what is appropriate in terms of racialist terms as well when we're dealing with these. So somebody might in front of me say, well, Phil, you know, you're part Jewish. And then when I'm not around, say, well, you know, he's got that vermin blood in him. What does that say about both our culture and about the individual that you would choose to say something that is clearly pejorative? And I think that it's important for us to appreciate that gender titles can be considered pejorative as well. When it gets to kids, I remember dating a woman whose son decided to change his name to Wes. That was fine, not a big deal. It was his choice. He's now back to his old name. Sometimes kids choose things for themselves because that's where they feel comfortable. And I tend to agree, what's the big deal? If the kid wants to be a he or a she or a they, that's fine.
Well, the conversation has really moved on a bit since I wanted to have a comment, but I've been thinking about really when politics meets this whole discussion of gender and sex, and there really, I mean, two things are going on. One is a kind of revolution, may be too strong, but certainly when I grew up, when I was young, it was a binary world, and now it's a very different world, and that whole process is obviously, well, obviously, perhaps not obviously to everybody, but obviously to people in this discussion, necessary and good. But then there's the whole politics thing. And a concept I've been thinking about meaning to explore is moral panic. When, I mean, it's very much in the interest of demagogues to identify a small group of people, a minority of some sort, as dangerous and scary. And I think that that's very much what's happened when we're talking about the drag people doing story time at school. I mean, in some ways, there's nothing more, it's playful and innocent. But in the demagogues world, it's a clearly identifiable group. Doing something really scary in the same way that when transgender people are in their minds in the wrong bathroom, there's something scary going on. And the language starts to get very slippery. So instead of gay and transgender suddenly become predator and, you know, it becomes groomers and in the end pedophiles or, you know, something along that line. That is being deliberately created at the moment. That is happening as a policy. And it's quite separate from really the discussion that that has been introduced today about, you know, where we're going in identity.
Thanks very much, Jonathan. I appreciate that. And the binary world that you and I grew up in told us that we couldn't grow our hair because we were being too feminine. And there were campaigns, not in Canada that I recollect, but certainly in the United States, to literally shave teenage boys' heads if they grew their hair too long.
High school I went to in Ottawa in the 60s, boys were sent home if hair was touching their ears.
And like, we learn new language and things all the time. Like, you know, Wi-Fi, email, like, the idea that TikTok is now a verb, And, you know, these are all things that are new in the world, right? So if we can get on board with email and every other word, technology language, then well, I'm sure that we'll eventually get over using they singular in grammar.
Erin, I'm just going to do one more comment about grammar because I am a grammar nerd. I'm going to say, I feel like this isn't really about pronouns because it's about society's acceptance of different social genders and the tension between the self-determination of two sets of people, right? And I say sets that refer to what I mentioned earlier, people who want you to refer to them as a certain pronoun and people who are saying like, I want to say what I want, right? Freedom of speech. I also think that there's, like I said before, the aspect of clarity in communication. The other thing I'd like to say is to consider the audience that you're speaking to. If the person isn't there, well, I was taught if the person is in front of you, you use their name. But that's polite. I was taught that was polite. So let's say we are telling a story and we say, Erin punched Phil in the face. They weren't happy about what he did. We have no clarity. We don't know who was unhappy about what. So again, what I'm saying, linguistically speaking, is I would go for clarity of the conversation of who's listening so that they understand what's going on.
I think you can assume if someone's punching the other person in the face, then you know who is not happy. I think
you could use any verb, right? Like, I mean, come on, you could use any verb, right?
But I'm saying you can also ask, right? So like if you're confused, just say, oh, who? And the person would be like, oh, Erin. Right? It's not that hard to ask a clarifying question. And I think that free speech does not exempt you from being hateful, right? And there's not, like, we have hate laws in Canada. So if you are creating a situation where people are being hated on for all of their marginalizations and you're inciting violence against them because you are just behaving with bigotry, then there's laws against that. So, you know, you have the right to say what you want, but you do not have an exemption from consequences for your behavior. So, like, if you refuse to use someone's pronouns and you want to behave like that behind their back, they will eventually hear about it and they will not want to hang out with you or work with you, or they will go to HR, or you know, whatever the situation is. And that is their right, because they have, like, if the things that you're saying are hateful and you're purposely misgendering them and stuff like that, then they can have a response to that. Just like you are free to do something, you're going to have a result from that action. And you should not be surprised when it happens.
Tanya, I'm just going to take over for a bit because we're getting close to the end. I think there's been a fabulous discussion.
Yes.
I think that we have focused on many, many issues associated with acceptance, tolerance, language confusion. And I think that this is all bound up in some senses in personal politics as well, that of which I think we should be sometimes very, very careful. There are many aspects of what we've been discussing, everything from telling children's stories to a person determining what their gender identity is and separating out gender from sex and sexuality. And I find it very interesting that we did not discuss too much, and I mean this seriously, too much, sex and sexuality as part of this. Rather, we talked about what are the respectful terms and what is the way to communicate respect and understanding in a culture. And Erin, I want to thank you very much for having taken us through this. And there you go. here in the Peanut Gallery. People are truly appreciative of what we've learned.
Yeah.
And people want your presentation. Is it copyrighted?
I haven't, but I can send it out to folks.
We'll get it to you. So anyway, Erin, thank you very much. Language is massive to me. I reflect back even to people like Noam Chomsky, for whom communication and discourse was something that we learned right in the very early primal days of our existence. But here today, we're in good old downtown Guelph and everywhere else that's beautiful. And fortunately, we are within a culture that appreciates and respects people of all diverse backgrounds. And so thanks again, Tanya. Now we've got the announcements.
Okay, we've got some council action happening on July the 19th at 5 p.m. We've got a council workshop on development charges. And then the development charges conversation continues with a special council meeting to look at the report on the development charges background study update. Please have your say about Guelph's bicentennial, about Guelph's culture plan, about Guelph's race to zero, and probably most importantly, there is a survey about the downtown infrastructural renewal. And the survey has to do with how you'd like your downtown streets to be changed or not changed. It has to do with bike lanes, how wide the sidewalk should be, how many lanes for cars there should be, that sort of thing. I encourage you strongly to take that survey. And then, of course, there's Bill 97. And I strongly suggest that you comment on this bill. You don't have to know much about it. You can Google Bill 97 and read summaries about it. And Ontario farmers have pushed back, which has come as a surprise to many. So you can push back too. Please Google ERO proposed policy and comment on it by August the 4th. And next week on Breezy Breakfast, we're going to be talking about Guelph Police Services. In particular, I think we're going to focus on, one of the focuses will be on the safety of downtown Guelph. And our guests are Chief Kobe, Deputy Chief Gill, and a member of the board, Peter McSherry. I'd like to thank everyone for being here. I'd like to thank Erin for her educational presentation and for fielding all of my language questions. Thank you all, and we'll see you next week.
That's all for today. Our meetings are live at the Rise and Shine restaurant in beautiful downtown Guelph at 8 a.m. every Thursday. You can also join us from the comfort of your own home by signing up for the Zoom link. Music for this podcast was provided by Jules Jones. And this podcast was produced by me, Alfie Chen. See you next week.